I believe the presentation is behind tab number one, for those of you that want to follow along. And I'd like to welcome Carol Brewster-Geis to the council. Take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, everyone, for having us here. My name, again, is Carol Brewster-Geis. I work with the Highly Migratory Species Management Division in Silver Spring, Maryland. And with me today is my colleague, Jess Beck, who is a CNUS Sea Grant Fellow and has been learning about sharks since she came here. My main purpose today is to get your ideas on issues and options for shark management, particularly for small coastal sharks, which I realized rarely, if ever, get into New England waters. However, what we're doing could affect fishermen in New England, depending upon what measures we take. And we're also considering options for pelagic sharks that could also affect New England fishermen. We are, at this point, in our scoping phase for this fishery management plan. That means that we're sort of running brainstorming sessions with everybody, and we'd love to hear any ideas on how to move forward for shark management. So I'm going to run through fairly quickly the current status of small coastal sharks, our current regulations, and some of the options that we are considering but haven't, we haven't proposed anything or done more than really wrote it down on these presentations. We're also working on Amendment 4, which is for the Caribbean. Once again, while the Caribbean is not New England, we do expect that some of the things we put in place might affect New England fishermen. So wanted to make sure to have your opinion on these. So moving on to the status of small coastal sharks. The stock assessment was done a couple years ago following the Southeast Data Assessment and Review process, or the CDAR process. That, for those of you who don't know, I believe it's similar to what New England does. It has three workshops, one workshop that focuses on data and catch indices, one that focuses on the assessments, and then a third which reviews it independently. So for sharp-nosed, bonnethead, and fine-toothed sharks, they are not overfished. Overfishing is not occurring. However, we do need to rebuild black-nosed sharks, as they are overfished with overfishing occurring. The assessment found that that under a scenario of no fishing mortality, they could rebuild in 11 years with a 70% probability. So we are looking at the plus one generation time, which comes out to rebuilding by the year 2027 with a TAC, a total allowable catch, of 19,200 fish. So that will be quite a reduction for the fishermen who land a lot more than that. This next slide here gives you an idea of where the fishing mortality occurs for black-nosed sharks. At the top row, you can see the average weight for commercial is around 5 pounds, and the average weight recreational is about 1.5 pounds. Most of the mortality comes from the shrimp bycatch, mainly in Gulf of Mexico, where you have 45%. And as you can see, on average, they catch 38,000 black-nosed sharks. Our total allowable catch under the rebuilding plan needs to be 19,200. Recreational is another source of mortality with 12%, and most of those that are caught are below our average size of 4.5 feet. Most black-nosed sharks, in fact, do not reach 4.5 feet. The other source of mortality is from our directed gillnet fishery, 22%. There's 5 vessels off of Florida that target black-nosed and black-tipped sharks. There are also a few other boats that target mackerel that are allowed to land and have directed permits for sharks. So Magnuson requires us to rebuild and set up a rebuilding plan for black-nosed sharks. We are hoping to have the final measures in effect by January 2010. As I said, we haven't proposed anything here. We are looking at potential objectives of rebuilding and preventing overfishing of black-nosed sharks and other species, as we need to, along with providing for a sustainable fishery for the other small coastal sharks. And, of course, as I'm sure all of you in the council are aware, we are always trying to improve monitoring and compliance in our fisheries. So the next couple slides will just very briefly go over some of our management measures for sharks. These are specific for small coastals, though many of them are also specific for large coastal and pelagic sharks. So we do have a quota that's one region, the Atlantic, Gulf of Mexico, and Caribbean, and one season that opens on or about January 1, and we go until we've reached 80% of the quota, and then we close it. And that has been in place actually since Amendment 2 went into place in July, so this is a fairly new measure. We do adjust annually on over and under harvest. However, species that are overfished, we do not allow for the underharvest to go back into the quota. There is no trip limit for directed permit holders. They are allowed to catch as many small coastals as they want as long as they have the correct permit. If you have an incidental permit holder, so these are fishermen who are targeting species other than sharks, they are allowed a combined total of 16 small coastal and pelagic sharks. All fins and all sharks, starting since July, must be naturally attached. Fishermen are allowed to trim the fins a little bit so they can fold them over along the body of the shark. We do have authorized gears of gill nets, long line, hand line, and banded gear. There are limited access permits for the commercial fishery. There is vessel and dealer reporting. There's observer requirements. We also require dealers to go to shark identification workshops in order to get their dealer permits, and we require fishermen to go to handling and release workshops to learn how to handle and release protected species along with prohibited sharks. Recreationally, we have authorized gears of rod and reel and hand line. There are authorized species that are different than the commercial species. Everybody has 19 prohibited shark species. In addition, recreational fishermen are not allowed to keep sambar or silky. They're allowed to keep what we call non-ridgeback large coastal sharks because they don't have a ridge on their back, plus tiger sharks. They do have a ridge, but we figure people can tell a tiger shark from the other species, plus pelagic and small coastals. Once again, recreational fishermen are still required to keep fins naturally attached. Recreational fishermen are also required to keep the head attached through landing. There is a minimum size of 4.5 feet fork length, and there is a retention limit of one shark per vessel per trip, with an additional one bonnet head and one Atlantic sharp nose per person per trip. We also issue exempted fishing permits and display permits to researchers or people collecting sharks for aquariums. So we announced that we were going to do this amendment in May, and since then we have received some comments. So the next slide I'm going to show you are the comments we've received to date, except they do not contain the comments from our advisory panel meeting that just happened last week, although many of those comments were similar to comments that are up here. Many fishermen do not believe that black-nosed sharks are overfished or that they feel that they might be overfished in some areas but not in all areas. They feel that a lot of fishermen and dealers in the past reported large coastals as small coastal sharks in order to extend the length of time the large coastal season was open, and thus that the catch in the past has been wrongly exaggerated. They feel we should move more towards species-specific and regional management for small coastal sharks, that we need to consider gear restrictions, that we should institute ITQs, and also the gillnet fishermen in particular are concerned that if we prohibit black-nosed sharks and attempt to get the fishing mortality down, that we will put them out of business. So the next round of slides I'm going to show are particular issues that we are trying to address and some of the options that we have come up with. And we welcome any options or additional issues that we might have missed. So the first issue, of course, is rebuilding black-nosed sharks because they are overfished. For commercial fisheries, we're considering removing black-nosed sharks from the small coastal shark complex and creating their own black-nosed shark-specific quota, potentially establishing bycatch caps. So if you catch an X number of black-nosed sharks, that's it for that trip. Given the large bycatch of black-nosed sharks in the shrimp trawl fisheries, working with the Gulf and South Atlantic councils to try to find some way of reducing the bycatch mortality, considering an individual fishing quota system, considering time area closures. Some of what we've heard from the South Atlantic and Gulf is that we should consider the same time area closures the Gulf already has in place for some of their other fisheries. Revising trip limits for the incidental commercial fishermen. If you remember, they are allowed 16 combined small coastal and pelagic sharks. A gill net endorsement, and this is something that our gill net fishermen would like to sort of limit who can use gill net to target sharks. And commercial gear modifications, including circle hooks, changes in mesh size, something to reduce black-nosed discards. And then if there are any others, we would love to hear more ideas. For recreational fisheries, as I said, most of the black-nosed sharks currently being caught are under the minimum size limit. Many of them are probably being caught in state waters, which could explain why it's not meeting the federal size limit. But trying to find some way to really get out outreach and education to recreational anglers on what the species are. What we've heard from both commercial and recreational fishermen is they don't even know that black-nosed sharks exist, much less know how to identify them. Revising the bag limit. Right now it's one shark per vessel per trip with an allowance for sharp nose and bonnet head. Maybe revising it in some way to reduce black-nosed bycatch, or to prohibit possession of black nose in the recreational fishery. Maybe we should provide time area closures for the recreational fishery or require reporting by recreational fishermen. Right now, unless the fisherman is contacted by MRFs or under LPS, they are not required to report their shark catches. We are also looking at other species beyond just small coastals. The Atlantic States Marine Fishery Commission recently adopted a coast-wide shark fishery management plan, for which we are very thankful. And in that plan, they have added in smooth dogfish. So we are considering adding smooth dogfish into our plan to complement theirs. And it's my understanding there is a growing smooth dogfish fishery in Massachusetts, so this could affect the New England area. We've also had the request to include ragged tooth sharks into the fishery management unit. This shark is not even considered on our data list at the moment, and my understanding there have only been half a dozen catches in all of the records. Add deep water sharks to the management unit. For those of you who follow HMS management, we've had deep water sharks in our management unit in the past when we were trying to prohibit finning. Once the Finning Prohibition Act went into place, we removed them from the management unit because the only management we had on them was the no finning. We have continued to receive requests mainly from environmentalists who are concerned about the status of deep water sharks and would like them to be managed in some way. We've had concern expressed to us from our advisory panel members and others about the common thresher, that they are caught a lot in tournaments, and many of those that are caught happen to be pregnant females who are just about to be pupped. We've also have concern expressed on pelagic sharks. ICAT, the International Commission for the Conservation of Atlantic Tunas, Just did a stock assessment for shortfin mako and blue sharks. As a result of those assessments, we might need to take additional steps to prevent overfishing. I believe it was on shortfin makos. I haven't actually seen the final results of those assessments, so we are looking at those. ICAD also conducted ecosystem risk assessments for a number of other pelagic species. So we're looking at those to see if we need to take any actions on pelagic sharks. And that could include poor beagle sharks, which we have reduced the quota for, but they are caught mainly off of New England. So if there are other species we need to consider, other shark species, we'd be happy to hear about that. Enforcement has asked us a number of times to improve our VMS, our vessel monitoring system, and vessel reporting. We are looking currently at whether or not we need to improve the VMS systems on the boat to make sure that they can allow for electronic vessel reporting. Not that we have electronic logbooks yet, but we believe that that's the way we might want to go. Increase VMS transmission frequency. Right now, vessels are required to put the VMS on 2 hours before they leave port, and then the VMS transmits every hour. Enforcement has asked for that to be increased slightly. And they've also asked us for hail-in, hail-out requirements for vessels to tell us when they're going out and when they're coming back in. Improving our ability to monitor and implement quotas. Just generally, whether or not we should establish regions for small coastal sharks. Whether we need to establish electronic dealer reporting for all sharks. If we need to modify the dealer reporting time, currently dealers report every 2 weeks, whether they should be required to report more frequently. Whether or not they should be fishermen should be required to offload directly to a shark dealer. Right now, oftentimes they offload at their own dock, and then a truck will come and pick up the sharks. So the dealer isn't actually aware of whether or not the fins have been landed or any of that. They just know what was put on their truck. So if there are any additional comments or issues that we haven't considered regarding sharks, we would love to hear about it. We have held three scoping meetings, and we have one more this Thursday. I believe in your presentation that you have, it says that it's going to be in our Nero office. Because they are busy moving, we have changed that to the Peabody Library. So slightly different time and location, but the same date. We're also trying to get to all of the councils to consult with them, and we're going to the Mid-Atlantic Council next week. So right now we're in our scoping phase. We hope to have the pre-draft to our consulting parties come December or January, with a proposed rule out next summer, and the final rule effective January of 2010. And if you wanted to provide comments on Amendment 3, that's the small coastal sharks, this is where to send it. Comment period ends on Halloween. As I said, I also wanted to talk a little bit about Amendment 4, which is specific to the Caribbean. The Caribbean is a unique area for us. Often has very different challenges than what we face here in the mainland. And we realize that many of our regulations don't necessarily fit well in the Caribbean region and how their fisheries operate. So we are developing an amendment to hopefully improve data collection and enforcement of our regulations while also ensuring that we are still in compliance with any treaties the U.S. is involved in. So besides the language problem in communicating with the Caribbean, the fisheries there are really small artisanal fisheries. Fishermen go out during the day and come back in, and then instead of selling their catch to dealers, they sell it to somebody on the street who happens to be selling fish to everybody. It's not a licensed dealer. We only have one dealer in the entire Caribbean right now, despite all the regulations. Because our permits are limited access, any of these smaller seasonal fishermen have a hard time getting their own HMS permit. So they don't have federal permits, and we don't receive any of their reports or catch information, which, of course, affects all of our stock assessments. We also have concerns about the fish aggregation devices, or FADs. They are being encouraged in the Caribbean region, and we're not sure of the impact that will have on HMS stocks. So we're currently scoping for this amendment as well. We're considering issues under vessel permitting, dealer permitting, commercial and recreational reporting, and authorized gear. As with Amendment 3, comment period closes on Halloween. And the timeline, because it's not a required timeline under Magnuson, it is a little bit longer, with the final rule expected out in spring of 2010. And this is where you can send comments for the Caribbean, Amendment 4. And that is all I have to share, but I am here to answer any questions or take ideas.
Thanks, Carol. Any questions or comments for Carol? Sally McGee.
Yeah, on your slide number 4, black nose mortality, can you talk about what you're planning to do to address bycatch in the shrimp fishery?
That is something that we are working very hard on, trying to figure out what the best way is to reduce bycatch in the shrimp trawl fisheries. There have been several ideas, as I said before. The Gulf has suggested using their same time area closures. They also have a bycatch cap, I believe it's on snapper, that they suggested we should fit right in on that. And if there's a certain number of blacknose being caught in the shrimp trawl, we would close that fishery. We've had the idea of maybe reducing the size, the spread of the bars on the TEDs. Right now they're 4 inches, potentially 3 inches. There's also been a lot of concern expressed because the shrimp trawl fishery has been reduced in effort due to the hurricanes since the assessment occurred. So we are looking at whether or not we should try to run some models to see, with the current reduction that's already occurred in the shrimp trawl fishery, how much more we need to do at this time.
And all of these options are being considered in this amendment?
Yes. And obviously, to implement anything on the shrimp trawl fishery, we would need to work with the Gulf Council, because we do not have jurisdiction over that.
But they're all on the table right now.
That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Rip Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question really was on the same thing and was answered. I was under the impression that in the shrimp fishery, and just one editorial comment, when I look at GOM, or in New England, we always think of the Gulf of Maine. I thought, well, this global warming problem is really getting bad when we have black nose in the Gulf of Maine. Anyway, you answered it. I was under the impression that there were TEDs in the shrimp fishery, and you're just saying it's a question of the spread of the bars.
That's correct. We do have video. CMAP has done some video of trawls just to see if the TEDs are working for turtles, and you can see in those videos blacknose and other shark species going through. We've had a lot of question about whether they could fit through the 4-inch, because they do have a wider girth, but the juveniles are a lot more flexible than the adults and are able to squeeze right through those bars.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I guess my comment was to that as well. There's some developments in New England that you may not be aware of. First of all, we have a Nordmoor grade here that we use in the shrimp fishery. It has 1-inch bar spacing. Perhaps you could put that behind the turtle excluder. You might have to go to a bigger bar. The shrimp down there are bigger than our shrimp. But it wouldn't be, you certainly don't need a 3-inch bar to let a Gulf of Mexico shrimp through. You could go a lot smaller than that, I believe. The second is, I've worked with a researcher named Pingo He at the University of New Hampshire, and we developed a what we call a topless shrimp trawl. It has no square, very little top belly, just a little bit ahead of the extension. I don't believe it's been tested in any other region yet, but the idea of this is that it lets the fish swim away. You know, any fish that rise up at all just go away. They never go through the net. That might help you both with turtles and with sharks and other things. I don't know where sharks go. I don't know if they go up or down when they enter the net, but it's something you could contact him. His name's Dr. Pingo Hee at the University of New Hampshire. And get the specifications on the trawl, and you might want to test it out down there. It certainly works very well for shrimp here. I use it, even though I'm not required to. I help develop it. The other one was on electronic reporting. As you probably just heard, our presentation on VMS, any additional strains you put on the VMS system are probably going to be problematic. I'm also in the study fleet. We transmit the equivalent of an electronic logbook, it's actually more detailed daily, to the Science Center. And we're not even close to 100% transmission success yet. We have a lot of issues with things that go up to the satellite, and then we don't know where they go after they go up there, but they don't come down. Or they come down and they disappear into servers, never to be seen again. Or basically, if you're going to use something like that for enforcement, it's not even close to 100% yet. I don't think you can require something that's going to have maybe a 75% success rate and call it a mandatory enforcement tool. So that's just kind of an editorial comment on where we are now. We've developed an electronic logbook, but it's the transmission aspect of it that's not ready for prime time yet.
Thank you.
Anything further? Okay. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Move on to the next agenda item. It's ICAT issues. I believe there's a document.